Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Labor's new push to build back better. An anniversary tomorrow that workers would like to forget. And today on the show, the International Union of Operating Engineers out of Minnesota and our labor lawyer, Joyce Goldstein. Welcome to the Friday, December 10th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. You can access us anytime, 24/7. Dave Mansour is going to be our first guest on the show today. He comes to us from the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 70. Local 70 is located in White Bear Lake, Minnesota. Website is IUOE70.org. We'll talk about his local. And they are one of 123 local unions that make up the International Union of Operating Engineers, a union that's been around since 1896. They have over 400,000 members, and they are the 10th largest union in the AFL-CIO. By the way, their International Training and Education Center, along with over 100 local training and apprenticeship programs, ensure that their members are the safest, the most productive, and highly skilled craft workers in North America. That's what it's all about. All that training, and especially for operating engineers, we'll talk about what they actually do, what sort of worker the local represents, what's the difference between a stationary local and a hoisting and portable local. Couple of technical terms there that we'll get into. So Dave's going to be our first guest. I'm sure he's excited, too, about the infrastructure and jobs bill. And if you get an opportunity, go to the AFL-CIO homepage, AFL-CIO.org, and you can see a state-by-state rundown of what kind of jobs are going to be created in America as a result of that bill. Altogether, they're talking maybe 2 million jobs. But certain states, obviously, are going to generate more jobs because they're so backward on the infrastructure. Broadband, that's a big one. $65 billion going there. Roads and bridges. Second guest is Joyce Goldstein. And she joined the show almost 2 years ago. And she is our labor law expert. 40 years now she's been involved practicing labor law, representing public and private unions, fringe benefit funds, employees in the construction, industrial service, as well as professional sectors. JoyceGoldsteinLaw.com. Joyce Goldstein Law. We got a lot of ground to cover. One of them is a ruling by an Ohio federal judge recently upholding an arbitrator's decision that an AT&T subsidiary, Ohio Bell, must give a former employee his job back after he pled guilty to causing a fatal crash in a company vehicle, ruling that the arbitrator's order comported with state law and a union contract. The union involved here was the communication workers, Local 4340. And Joyce represented that local, and she won the case. She's pretty excited about that one. I don't blame her. The other one is Starbucks. Yesterday, workers at a Starbucks store in Buffalo, New York, voted to form a union, making it the first of more than 8,000 Starbucks locations in the country to unionize. Wow. And they fought it. Starbucks did not want this to happen. No. A second Buffalo location voted against unionizing, and a third had a majority vote for the union, but due to a number of challenges to individual ballots, the results are not final there. For the Starbucks employees at the union store, this means they will begin to negotiate a contract for better wages, better benefits, and better working conditions. Pretty exciting. And you kind of saw that coming because the National Labor Relations Board gave the go-ahead on the vote. Different people in Washington making worker-friendly decisions. I'm sure we'll touch on that as well. We're also going to get into the new Amazon union election. That election was just a mess. The workers voted it down. Many of them saying, you know what, if I knew more, I would have voted for the union. So I don't know when that's going to happen. And if we have time, the labor board is setting its sights on permanent strike replacements. This happens a lot when workers multiple times reject a contract. In fact, this just came up this week with Kellogg's. And the workers at Kellogg's voted down an agreement. And they've been on strike for almost 2 months now. And the company came out right away saying, okay, that's it. We're done. We're going to replace you. So now the labor board is going to look into that. And hopefully we'll have some time to cover that. Joyce Goldstein, our last guest on the show. The Labor Federation is continuing with their big push to build back better. They sent out emails yesterday. Hashtag, by the way, is build back better. Just go to that. And they're showing the benefits in this piece of legislation. And from all indication, we might see this pass by the end of this year. They're trying to get it done by Christmas. Whether or not that's going to be the case, I don't know. They just got to get the Democrats together on this. But the Labor Federation says this legislation will help working people. It will create jobs. It will lower costs and protect our rights in the workplace. Because there's a number of components in that legislation that are part of the PRO Act, Protect the Right to Organize. So the House passed it. Now it's in the hands of the Senate. And here's a few things in the bill that will help you as a working man or woman. Number one, creation of hundreds of thousands of good-paying union jobs in the green economy. Number two, removal of tax breaks for corporations offshoring jobs. Hello. It's about time they stop the madness there. And lastly, guarantee workers get paid family and medical leave. Now, they kind of whittled that down. Originally, that was 12 weeks. It's down to four. But hey, you know what? At this point, we'll take the four. We'll take the four. You can find more at AFL-CIO.org. Well, tomorrow marks the 20th anniversary of China's official entry into the World Trade Organization. And I've got two words to reply to that. Bad idea. Bad idea. I'm going to read to you a statement from Scott Paul of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. He said, it's pat nowadays to point out how badly America's political elites got China's entry into the WTO wrong. But it's astounding to reflect on just how wrong they were. We were told that China would open its market to U.S. companies to sell their products. Remember that? Instead, China has largely left its market closed, and those who are able to do business there must hand over their intellectual property in return. Oh, boy. A lot of companies got burned on that one. We were told that China would play by the rules of global trade. Instead, time and time again, China has broken those rules largely without consequence, costing millions of American jobs. And they have an accounting on this. 3.7 million U.S. jobs were lost due to trade deficits with China. And that's not even the full 20 years. They calculated that between 2001 and 2018. So that's a 17-year period. So you got to add a couple more years on that, and that'll take it over 4 million jobs. U.S. workers suffered a direct net wage loss of $37 billion per year. Per year. Since joining the WTO, China has had 47 formal trade complaints filed against it. 75% of new steel capacity has come from China since 2000. How many times have we talked to the steelworkers about that? 1 in 5 North American companies have been victims of intellectual property theft by Chinese firms. So many times a company would set up in China and they say, hey, we're going to produce this widget. China would say, oh, that's great. Set up shop right here. And you know what they did? They send their spies into the company, copied everything down, and then they would open up the same kind of shop down the street, eventually knocking that business, an American business, out of business. That's what China did. Scott said, we were told that China would liberalize moving from a planned economy, an authoritarian state, to a free market and a democracy. Yeah, right. Yes, it was a mistake for the U.S. to vote to allow China to join the WTO, but while we can't go back to 2001, we can begin to right the wrongs of 20 years ago. Leaders in Washington, including President Biden and lawmakers on Capitol Hill, must now respond with a smart industrial policy to help the United States compete globally, especially in emerging sectors like clean energy and electric vehicles. And I'll tell you, the time to do that is now, because in that infrastructure bill that I just talked about, there is a capacity to produce charging stations, support the American auto workers so people can afford to buy those electric vehicles. We talked about this yesterday with the UAW. They're trying to add a $4,500 tax credit if you bought a union-made electric vehicle. Right now, it's $7,500. So you can get a you're talking $12,000 right there. I know the non-union companies are fighting that, but what do you expect them to do, right? But anyway, we're at the crossroads right now. Hopefully our leaders in Washington will get the message, because they obviously didn't get it 20 years ago. All right. We're going to take a quick break when we come back. The operating engineers out of Minnesota.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And, of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Interesting story I came across the other day about teachers. The 2018 teacher strikes in Oklahoma and Arizona have offered important insights on how social media can advance labor's goals. While both strikes show the power of social media to organize, the study suggests that Arizona teachers used it more effectively to mobilize, which helps explain why almost 92% of Arizona teachers struck compared to 72% of teachers in Oklahoma. Arizona teachers use their Facebook group to build non-digital organizing, including establishing a network of 2,000 school site representatives, and they focused on encouraging teachers to win over their coworkers, while Oklahoma's Facebook group focused on those who already supported the strike. So they're like preaching to the choir. Digital mobilization efforts in Arizona also enabled 16 preparatory actions before the strike, compared to only one in Oklahoma. And they tracked participation by having teachers comment in the group. Now, some say that this case study does not provide a universal model, as different approaches are needed for contexts where unions are stronger and labor rights are more robust, like the 2019 Chicago and Los Angeles teacher strikes. But keep in mind, those two states I just referenced, Arizona and Oklahoma, are not what you call labor-friendly states. They're both right-to-work states. Now, Arizona is definitely changing. There's no doubt about that. But nonetheless, that's interesting. And I'll tell you, social media is so darn powerful today. And it's good to see that some people are using it to do the right thing. In this case, organize, grow their union. Members of the Communication Workers of America Local 6001, who work as airline passenger service agents in Texas, released a digital ad campaign ahead of the holiday travel season to raise awareness about the increase in passenger rage incidents and to encourage civility among passengers. We've done several shows on this. It's been really, really nasty. People that don't want to wear their masks on an airplane. And they cause all kind of problems. Many of them have been tossed out and banned. In fact, they're talking about like a permanent ban. Well, these ads are currently running on Facebook and Instagram. Incidents of passenger rage, including physical and verbal assault directed toward passenger service agents, have been steadily increasing, but gaps in enforcement in federal law means that abusive passengers are often not held accountable for their behavior. So this is why they released the ad. Again, this is courtesy of the CWA Local 6001. Let's listen.
We're humans just like you.
We are mothers and fathers.
We're sisters and brothers.
Our goal is to always help you travel better, safer, and faster.
And the truth is, we're struggling with the same things you are.
We don't like long lines either.
Like you, we're just trying to fix the problems.
We're in this together.
So give a smile, and we'll give one back.
If you say thank you, we will say thank you back.
And if it gets tough, just take a breath.
We're your friends, and we're trying to get you where you need to go.
So help us help you.
We won't give up on you.
We won't let you down.
We will get you where you need to go.
In the end, we're in this together.
Again, that's courtesy of CWA Local 6001 launching a digital ad campaign. Just essentially telling people, hey, you know, be nice, be nice. And we understand there's a lot of people frustrated in America today, but you don't need to assault a passenger service agent. And CWA represents many. They are the parent union of the Association of Flight Attendants, which is run by Sarah Nelson, who's been all over the media talking about this. As you can tell, we're having a little difficulty trying to link up with our first guest. That would be Dave Mansour of the Operating Engineers out of Minnesota, getting a text that he might be tied up. So we might have to reschedule. Dave is the business manager and financial secretary for the Operating Engineers, which have about 123 local unions throughout the U.S. and Canada. A lot of stories here to report on, though, and I want to give a salute to Fred Redmond. Fred Redmond is now the Secretary Treasurer of the AFL-CIO, been with the Steelworkers. He still is with the Steelworkers. We just had him on the show last Friday. We started this segment when it was announced that he was going to become the number two person in the AFL-CIO, and the reason that happened is because of the death of Richard Trumka back in August. So Liz Shuler is now the president, Fred's secretary treasurer. And I'll tell you, this guy is a fighter. He was on the picket line the other day, expressing solidarity with members of Teamsters Local 174 who are on strike against Stoneway Concrete in the Seattle area. More than 100 members of that local, again 174, walked off the job on December 1st, calling on the company to stop undercutting its workers and to bargain in good faith. Local 174 also went on strike Monday against four other concrete companies in Kings County, Washington. The Washington State Labor Council, AFL-CIO officers, President Larry Brown, Larry comes from the Machinists Union, and Secretary Treasurer April Sims from AFSCME joined Fred on the Teamsters picket line on Tuesday, where they called on members to keep fighting one day longer. So hats off to Fred Redmond and his team up there in Washington. I'm talking about steelworkers. More than one-third of American families with young children face diaper insecurity. How about that? Diaper insecurity, which is an issue impacting the health and well-being of infants and toddlers in communities across the country. While recognizing the needs of their neighbors, members of the United Steelworkers, Women of Steel in Wisconsin, and other local unions held a diaper drive at the Milwaukee Area Labor Council last Saturday. Get this. The Women of Steel diaper drive collected almost 8,000 diapers and 12,000 wipes for a retail value of more than $3,300. How about that? Diaper insecurity. Where's America going? You got to ask that question. Oh, lots of labor news, as I indicated. United Food and Commercial Workers Local 1439 announced this week that some 250 grocery workers at Fred Meyer in Richland, Washington, will join the union after a victorious election, marking the first time in recent history that an entire store of grocery workers in the state have done so. The organizing win now paves the way for these union members, new union members, to move forward at bargaining their first union contract to strengthen pay, benefits, and working conditions. Comment here from Jeff Hostater. Jeff is the Secretary Treasurer of Local 1439. He said this is an unprecedented victory inspired by the sacrifices of essential grocery workers during the pandemic. We hope this inspires other grocery workers to stand up and exercise their rights. The bargaining team of the Professional Employees Council of Sparrow Hospital, Michigan Nurses Association, an affiliate of the National Nurses United organization, have reached a tentative agreement with the hospital administration for a new three-year contract last Friday, averting a possible strike. The new agreement includes significant wage increases, no increases in health care premiums. That's worthy of repeating. No increases in health care premiums, a safe staffing process, and contractually guaranteed access to personal protective equipment. Kathy Pontifex is the president of that union. She said, "We truly believe that this contract will make a difference for caregivers working at our hospital, for the patients we serve, and for our community as a whole. We are really proud of the solidarity shown by caregivers in advocating for our patients and our community. In November, 96% of their members voted to authorize a strike. Some 2,200 union members will cast their ballots in the coming days on whether to ratify that agreement." Hats off to the Nurses and Professional Employees Council in Sparrow Hospital, and that's in the state of Michigan. Michigan. All right, let's see what else we have here. The American Guild of Musical Artists and Ballet Idaho announced this week that the dancers of Ballet Idaho have joined the American Guild of Musical Artists. Now, a vote was held Tuesday, November 30th, based upon mutual agreement between the union and the performing arts company. Given the result in favor of forming a union, Ballet Idaho has recognized the union as the exclusive bargaining representative of the dancers. Leonard Egert is the national executive director of the American Guild of Musical Artists. He said, "We're thrilled to welcome the dancers of Ballet Idaho. We look forward to a collaborative process with the management as the safety, well-being, and long-term success of these artists remain a top priority of both parties." All right. Lots of news, and more is coming, I'll tell you. All right, we're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to give one more attempt to try to link up with Dave Mansoor. Otherwise, we're going to jump over to Joyce Goldstein. Joyce has been really, really busy. A lot of real pro-worker decisions coming out of the National Labor Relations Department. And we'll talk about that and more back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our Raising Wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, we're available on six platforms now. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and the platform known as Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always like those five-star ratings. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency, always connecting people with employment. You can find more at ulagency.org. I would imagine they're pretty busy right now. We're talking yesterday about how many people are quitting their jobs. And for 3 months in a row, we have seen over 4 million people saying, adios, I'm not working here anymore. A lot of people are frustrated, especially those on the front lines, essential workers. Hospitality industry, restaurant industry has gotten hit pretty bad. Retail has gotten hit. And these workers are crying for better wages and better benefits, and you can't blame them. We're in the middle of a pandemic, and they were called essential workers. They were called heroes, but they're not getting paid as such, so they're leaving the profession. A lot of truck drivers, too. They took an early retirement, and as a result, there's 80,000 openings for truck drivers right now. Still having some difficulty trying to link up with Dave Mansoor, the operating engineers, and we'll get to Joyce Goldstein in a minute. I want to talk about child care providers because this is an industry that got hit hard, too, in the pandemic, and they play a very important role in our children's lives. By being there for our children and allowing us to focus on our own jobs, they help support our country's entire economy. But for far too long, child care providers have not been treated as the essential workers that they are. Predominantly women of color, they are among the lowest paid workers in our country. Well, now the union AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, says child care providers are having their moment. In states across the country, they are organizing together to form strong unions and raising their voices like never before. Now, I want to take you to a video here, and it's really interesting. I know this is radio or a podcast, but you can get it, especially with the dialogue that's going on. And in this segment, a woman by the name of Charlotte Neal is featured, and she is a member of Child Care Provided United. Child Care Providers United, which is affiliated with AFSCME. She's also the owner of a family daycare center in Sacramento, California. Let's listen here on America's Workforce.
We're coming together to actually try to start to become a union, get the steps to get there, to get everybody on board to say that we could do this, that we can bring change. And that's a lot. That was a lot to do because a lot of people didn't believe that it could happen with our past history. We weren't able to do it. It took us almost 16 years plus to get to this point where we are, that now we are a union. But to get people in to stand, to come out and support, to go to the Capitol. How that we did it was, what is your biggest concern as a child care provider? If you had three things to do, tell me what your biggest concern was. It was no pay, no support, into educational for providers to get supplies, that type of thing. And so, and I would say, you're not alone. That is not only your voice, that is not only your concern and your worry, it's everybody else's concern and everybody else's worry who's a child care provider. It's misconceptions when they think of a union. Their conception of a union is, oh, it's some people that I don't know and they're making decisions for me. But we had to change that thinking to, we are the union. I am the union. You are the union. It's us working together. It's not somebody that we don't see. It's people just like you and me every day who do child care, who knows the struggle of a child care provider. And so that person was like, yeah, you know, do you want health care? Is that a concern to you? Yeah, I don't have health care. Oh, do you want a retirement? How long have you been doing child care? Oh, I've been doing it 17 years. So do you think that after you've finished doing child care that you should have a retirement? Yeah, I feel that I should have a retirement. Those are what we're working for. Those are what we're fighting for. And so that was to get people motivated, to get people to believe, you know what? I want to change that. I am the union. That I am the one, I should be the voice for other providers to go tell them that we have an opportunity. We have a chance. If you believe and you think like me, we can do it. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. But with us working together, we want to have a seat at the table. We want to change this child care system. We want to change how things are ran. We want to have a voice. We want to have a say-so.
Again, that was Charlotte Neal, who's a member of the Child Care Providers United Union, affiliated with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And the struggle that she talked about, 17 years in the making. 17 years in the making. We are a union. I am the union. You are the union. I like that takeaway. I like that a lot. Expanding public transportation is vital to ensure a fair economic recovery. But some transit bosses are complaining of a lack of workers. In New York City, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority is offering, get this, $35,000 in bonuses for retired subway workers to come back and work for 3 months. 3 months, $35,000 in bonuses. John Costa, we've had him on the show a number of times. He heads the Amalgamated Transit Union. He's the international president. He told the New York Times that these bonuses are a knee-jerk reaction instead of a serious attempt to attract qualified workers with better wages and benefits. Now, in Washington, D.C., transit agencies also say they are struggling to find experienced workers. We are having a problem, but I really don't think the problem is the driver shortage. I think that the problem is the wage shortage. Ray Jackson said that. He's president of ATU Local 689. They represent transit workers in the greater Washington, D.C. region. Jackson said blue-collar workers in this country have had enough, and that's what we're seeing. We just want fair wages and fair benefits. That's all we're asking for. And here's the latest regarding the post office. President Biden has made a surprising announcement. He will not renominate two members of the Board of Governors, including the chairman, Ron Blum. Blum has consistently supported the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, even as DeJoy has tried to sabotage the mail service by slowing down mail delivery, hiking up postage prices, and threatening our right to vote by mail. Now, you may remember, DeJoy was the Republican mega donor who was handpicked by Donald Trump to run the Postal Service. He has been widely criticized for his decision to slow down mail delivery and raise postage prices, as well as for the potential personal profit that he could make from those plans. Despite the alarming changes made under DeJoy's leadership and the negative impact they'll have on voters, families, and small businesses, Chairman Blum has constantly backed him. So their relationship has drawn some scrutiny due to Blum and DeJoy's financial ties. In a span of just 7 months, Mr. DeJoy purchased up to $305,000 in bonds from the asset management firm where Blum is a senior executive. Uh-oh. So what Biden is doing, many are saying, is a game changer, but we need to speak out immediately and make sure his replacement is dedicated to firing DeJoy. I was wondering why this is not happening. Biden just can't say, DeJoy, you're out of here. Doesn't work that way. They have a board of governors, and the governors make that decision. But if you change the board of governors, including the chairman, we might see some things happening. There's some good legislation, too, that the Postal Service is pushing on, and we're working on getting the head of the union, the American Postal Workers Union, on the show. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our labor attorney, Joyce Goldstein.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange, news, talk, sports, and workforce politics, the fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, which is AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. And welcome back to the show, Joyce Goldstein. Joyce Goldstein and Associates, been doing labor law for, my gosh, four decades now. Website is joycegoldsteinlaw.com, and we got a lot of ground to cover. And it's always nice to start off with a win. I'll tell you, I know a lot of lawyers, and when they win a case, it's party time. Hey, Joyce Goldstein, welcome back to America's Workforce. How are we doing today?
Great. Thanks, Flash. Wins are always great. They certainly beat the alternative.
Exactly. Well, this one involves an AT&T subsidiary that many know as Ohio Bell. Interesting case. I'm going to let you take it from there. Go ahead.
Sure. So in this case, which we, as you said, we won, this is a case that our firm handled, and we got the decision from the federal court in the Northern District of Ohio just a few weeks ago. And what happened in that case was there had been a really unfortunate accident. There was an employee and a member of CWA Local 4340 who was driving a company vehicle and got in a terrible accident. He hit and killed a child and injured the child's mother. He was not impaired. He wasn't speeding. He wasn't texting. None of that. But, you know, it was just a terrible accident. And he originally was charged with homicide. He wound up pleading guilty to a lesser charge in the criminal case. Of a third-degree misdemeanor, which really he agreed to, as the judge recognized, to satisfy the victim's family. And he served 60 days in jail, and at the end of that, he was fired. Ohio Bell, the subsidiary, as you say, of AT&T, fired him. And the union filed a grievance on his behalf, and the case went to arbitration, and the arbitrator sustained the grievance and reinstated him, said that there was not just cause to fire him. The arbitrator gave him a 60-day suspension, and that was it. So put him back to work and pay him any additional back pay that was owed for the difference. So that was a great outcome for him and for the union, but the company refused to accept that outcome. And even though the parties agreed that the arbitrator's decision would be final and binding in these situations, and that the standard for whether somebody could be disciplined was just cause, the company didn't want to honor its agreement. And so it filed a lawsuit in federal court seeking to vacate the arbitrator's award. And they resisted having to put him back to work. And as I said, we defended the union in that case, and we filed a counterclaim to enforce the arbitration decision. And happily, on November 16th, Judge Gwynn here in the Northern District of Ohio agreed and threw out the company's case and ruled in the union's favor and in the grievance favor, and said that the company needed to put him back to work. And also, in addition to that, they needed to put him back to work and pay back pay. The judge also ordered that the company pay prejudgment interest to him for all of the time spent, you know, the interest that accrued over all this time that he's continued to be out of work. So it was a great win.
And we're done. There's no federal appeals court that might interfere with this right now. This is complete.
No, the clock actually is still running for about another week or so. So, no, it is possible that the company could file a notice of appeal with the Sixth Circuit. So, that remains a possibility. Let's hope they don't do that. It's hard to imagine what grounds they would have to appeal. It was hard to imagine why they sued to vacate to begin with, but sometimes employers do that. So hopefully they won't in this case. Hopefully they will just go ahead and honor the arbitrator's decision and the court's decision and let everyone go on with their lives.
Well, great job on this, Joy, and we salute the local here. That's CWA Local 4340 standing up for their workers, and one in particular here. Let's move on to Starbucks, and I've been watching this one for a while, and I know Starbucks is not too happy about it, but we had a vote in Buffalo, New York, and I guess, actually three stores. What is it, three different outcomes? What's the story there?
Yeah, right. There were three different Starbucks stores in Buffalo that had union representation elections. All were voting by mail ballot. and three different outcomes, as you said, in each of those stores. The one great outcome was the union won the right to represent the employees there, and the vote in that store was 19 in favor of representation and 18 opposed. In the second store, the union lost. It was a vote of 12 against unionizing, 8 in favor. But there is an issue there about missing ballots, as I understand it, that, again, as I said, it was done by mail ballot. And according to the union's attorney in Buffalo, there were additional ballots that were submitted that the NLRB didn't count. So we'll see about that. That, you know, so the outcome in that one could change. But at this point, on that second store, it's 12-8 against unionization. In the third store, the union is ahead, but there are some challenged ballots. So there is the union of the ballots that were counted. There were 15 in favor of unionization, 9 opposed, but there were 7 challenged ballots. 6 were challenged by the union and 1 by the company. And the challenged ballots had to do with whether those workers actually worked at the particular store that was being organized and whether or whether they're they actually were working at another store or were laid off from another store and whether they are, you know, and I think that there was some issue of temporary reassignment to this particular store. And so then there was a question of whether they should be permitted to vote along with the regular workers at that third store. And what's important here about the numbers is that, as I said, the vote was 15 in favor of unionization, 9 opposed, and the union challenged 6 ballots. So when the way this process works is that the union was actually 1 vote short of a determination that those 6 challenged ballots were irrelevant, because, of course, you have to assume the worst, assume that all challenges could affect the outcome. And in this case, if all 6 of those challenges voted against the union, it would have resulted in a tie of 15-15. And in a tie situation, the union loses, because in order for a union to gain representational status, it has to win a majority. So it has to be 50% plus 1. So if it's just a tie vote, the union loses. So here, the fact that the outcome was 15-9 with these 6 challenge ballots that could be determinative means that we really don't know the outcome yet. Still to come. And I think that in any case, there's a long way to go with the Starbucks situation. There are 5 days after a count to file objections, and I'm sure that in this case that Starbucks will definitely find some reason to object to the union's win. Again, we know that the union is going to object to the one where they lost because of the issue of missing ballots. That there was an attempt to vote, they weren't counted. And in the third store, we know that we're going to have an issue of resolution of challenge ballots, and there may also be separate objections on that. So it's a great start for the union, because it's the first time that there's even really the possibility of a union representing workers at a Starbucks-owned store, at a corporate store in the United States. But, you know, keep in mind that, keep it in context, there are about 235,000 Starbucks employees in 9,000 stores throughout the United States. And as you heard, I mean, we're talking about really tiny numbers here. But I think everybody understands that both on the union side and obviously on the Starbucks side, that this is really symbolic. And if the union can make an inroad here, it will obviously encourage others elsewhere to keep on. And so it is, it's really important. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. And to that point, Joyce, I'm looking all over media right now, and there's a lot of play on this story, a lot of focus. I mean, Wall Street's watching this. This is a biggie. And it's a start. And I want to say one more thing here, and this shows why elections matter, because none of this would be happening if we didn't have a change at the National Labor Relations Board. They pretty much gave the go-ahead on that vote at Starbucks. And also, look what's going on at Amazon. There's going to be a new vote there. Now, the situation there, there was a couple of things at play. And what do we know about that as far as Amazon? We're talking about the Bessemer, Alabama situation.
Right. So in Amazon, we've talked about it before, and people may know, there was an election there at a warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama, and the union lost pretty decisively there. The vote against unionization was more than 2-1. But the union filed an objection to that election and raised a number of different issues. And the hearing examiner that first considered those objections found that some of them were warranted and recommended that the results be set aside and there be a rerun election. What's happened recently, on November 29th, so just in the last 2 weeks, the regional director of that NLRB office agreed with the hearing examiner's conclusion that there should be a rerun election there. And the big issue that has come up over and over on that Bessemer, Alabama case was that Amazon had the United States Postal Service install its own mailbox on company property right outside the facility. And just like in the Starbucks situation, there was a mail ballot election. And so people were voting their NLRB election ballots and depositing them in this mailbox that was just installed, that Amazon had installed on its property. And there was also a lot of surveillance going on. And the combined effect of this is it really gave the impression that Amazon was controlling the entire process through, you know, its surveillance, through the installation of the mailbox. And there was other improper polling of employees and that sort of thing. So the regional director, as I said, ordered a new election in that case. And we'll see on that. That's also the company has until December 13th, so another few days to seek review of the regional director's decision. But the process will go on even if review is sought at the full NLRB of that decision. So we will see. As the election originally was back in April, and so what you see is that even when there's been employer misconduct, that they still can drag it out. So the election was in April. We're now into the, you know, approaching the end of the year. It's 8 months later until there's then the next election. And of course, as we know, in all of these companies, there's so much turnover. And if employers can delay, it's, you know, typically in the employer's interest to do that.
Justice delayed is justice denied. We always say that all the time. Well, Joyce, we're going to have to leave it on that note. Next time, we can talk about the permanent strike replacements. And I know the general counsel at the Labor Board is looking into that. And that's really, really important right now because of these strikes I just referenced earlier in the show about Kellogg's workers. They voted down a contract this week, and the company is saying, you know what, we're going to replace you. And now the NLRB is saying, wait a minute, maybe not. So, Joyce, you take care. Thank you so much. Again, Joyce Goldstein and Associates. The website is joycegoldsteinlaw.com. You take care. Best of the we will talk to you in the new year. How's that sound?
Sounds great. Thank you, and happy holidays to you, too.
All right. That'll be another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the local musicians union and the operating engineers, Local 49. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.